It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Good morning. A happy Tuesday. A very Monday-feeling Tuesday.
It is a Monday-feeling Tuesday.
Yeah. Because we weren't here yesterday.
Kind of weird.
Do you know how many times when I was writing yesterday, when I wanted to write Monday, I wrote Sunday instead?
Oh.
Yesterday had such a Sunday vibe to me. Usually, when you have that Monday off for a holiday weekend, it always feels to me like a bonus day. It always feels very, hey, this is weird to me. But yesterday just felt like Sunday. Which was different. So today now feels like Monday. I don't feel like we're starting a short week.
Did your
very strange
Sunday feel like a Saturday?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because we were up here Saturday night in Sacramento.
Okay.
We went to a Taylor Swift show at Ace of Spades. Taylor Swift wasn't here. She didn't pull up to Ace of Spades. But it was a DJ just playing Taylor Swift music all night. It was a 3-hour set. And it was honestly, I'm not like a huge Taylor Swift fan or anything. Had a great time. Had a blast. The vibes were incredible.
That just seems like a weird thing to do, to just like be at a place and just play one person's songs.
Right.
The best
but that,
of.
It wasn't like a secret. It wasn't out of the blue. This was what the show was. People were dressed up like they were going to the Eras tour.
That's
weird. And just pulling up for a DJ set, and the DJ was vibing out to the music and having a great time.
I mean, I get it. I'm sure the vibe was cool, but the concept itself,
very strange
to me, is very
definitely
strange.
If you had told me, no, it wasn't like super expensive to get in or anything. And Ace of Spades, of course, put on a great show. It was a ton of fun. But if you had told me, hey, it's just going to be a DJ pushing play on a Taylor Swift playlist, it's ostensibly what it was. I'm not totally sure I would have gone.
Okay.
But I thought it was going to be like a mix, like a set where the DJ is doing like mixes of Taylor Swift songs and maybe sprinkling in some other songs, and it was going to sound a little different. Nope. Just people dancing and singing along.
Okay, so I think I might have a $1 million idea here.
Okay.
We should start a tour where we reenact the greatest plays of sports, whatever.
Just you and me?
Just me and you. No, we can have others. We could do like a 49ers show where we reenact like every step that Joe Montana takes before he hits Dwight Clark in the back of the end zone. Dwight Clark's exact route.
Yeah, we could just redo the 82 NFC Championship game. Just top to bottom, why not?
Yeah, just like people would come out wearing 49ers gear.
Mm-hmm.
We would wear uniforms, no helmet, no.
Yeah,
we'd just reenact every single play.
Sure,
and then we could have like a playbook so people know what's coming up next.
Nice,
like,
very
this
good.
Is the John
Taylor
bill. Play.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Okay, I love this.
Yeah,
I love this idea.
Taking
the concept of the show on Saturday to a sports conclusion.
Yes.
Would be everybody showing up to Levi Stadium and just playing a game on the Jumbotron.
Yeah.
That's it. And then everybody cheering along like the game's happening on the field.
That'd be wild.
That's what it was. It was a great time. It was such a good time. I love the idea of us going out and reenacting games. We should definitely do that.
I think
people would pay to watch us do that.
I think people would pay to watch us. I don't know if they would pay to watch us. But we could at least, you know, break it down.
The Chatty House is in to be our extras.
Okay.
All right, party on.
I think they would be our extras, yeah.
So, speaking of people getting paid, Trent Williams got paid today. Well, he hasn't gotten paid yet. He has agreed to enough of a deal to end his holdout.
Mm.
They're not over the finish line yet, but they're close enough on the particulars that he's good to report to camp. My guess is that he's been good enough on the particulars to report to camp for several days.
Yeah. Or weeks. But
which does not, it's what we talked about last week. They have the bonus practice today, the 49ers do. They have Wednesday off, and then they practice for real on Thursday. And That threw me off.
Sorry.
train of thought. We're bringing it back. He's flying out to the facility today to report. I don't know that he'll practice today.
Well, he still has to take a physical.
Right. He's got to do all that. He's got to. Yeah. He might want to sign his deal before he actually takes a field. He's just going to report.
Yeah.
So my guess is he won't practice today. And if he does, he won't do a lot, which means he starts practicing in earnest on the Thursday the regular season starts, which follows the Nick Bosa track.
Yeah, exactly. Now, do they have like a whole stash of those red feather pins that everyone signs with a quill? Mm-hmm. Did you see that?
Yes. Yes.
So that's a thing.
That's a whole thing.
That's a whole thing that everyone gets. Yes. Okay. And then you get to keep that, I'm sure. And you probably have like a...
I don't know.
I'm sure you probably have like a commemorative box that you keep it in.
I don't know.
You don't think so? You think it's the same one?
Yeah, maybe. They just have the ceremonial quills.
I'd want the pin.
I mean, maybe they do. I don't know, man. You know what? I have people I can ask. I will find out an answer to this by the end of this show.
Okay.
I'm not going to do it right now because I have to text people, but I will try and find out by the end of this program.
This is something I think we need to know.
Yeah. I've never gotten it though. So Brandon Ayuk officially signed his deal, I think Friday. Uh-huh. And he did. Yep. The big quill pen. That's something. I don't know the connection. Like, why a quill pen?
Well, I just think if you're the Declaration Eagles of Independence
or the Seahawks. But it's not. You're not independent now. You're under contract.
Yeah.
And it's not like they're the 76ers where, like, July 4, 1776. It's the declaration. It's the pen. Yeah. They're the 49ers. Like, if they wanted to follow the bit, shouldn't it just be like a piece of coal or whatever they used to write with?
Lump of coal.
Yeah. Is it?
Just like some really bad chalk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they need to stick to the bit.
Mm.
Or just do a regular fountain pen. The feather has no place here.
Yeah, but I think like if you were to ever sign like a huge contract, whatever it is that you're doing, I think you'd want to keep the pen. I don't know.
Probably.
Yeah.
And maybe they get to keep it. I don't know. I'll try and have
it on my shelf. Like, this is the
but
pen
if you, but if you...
that I signed that was $120 million over 4 years. On an interesting note, I feel like your computer came back to life over there.
No, because watch what happens now.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's just struggling a little bit. It's fine. Like I said, I'm not letting it get my vibe down today.
All right. No, that's fine.
No, I started this. So this morning, I had a sports update recorded. If you listen to the Eagle or 98 Rock before you tune into this program, shout out. But also... I have that recorded because I have to drive in to work.
Mm-hmm.
So I get that going in the mornings, and then, well, I had it recorded, and then after I had it recorded, I look at the news and, oh, my whole update, which had been about Trent Williams not getting a deal done over the weekend, Trent Williams has a deal done. So I'd woken up to make coffee and write, so I had to stop what I'm writing to go make sure that I have the Trent Williams piece that I pre-wrote, make sure that all the details there were correct. Then I had to go up and re-record the sports update that you hear on 98 Rock and the Eagle, and then get to the actual writing that I woke up to do. I got out the door late. I had to stop at Target before I came in. It was just a mess. It was a mess of a morning. So the vibes are still up, though. I'm good to go. I've been thrown off my routine, and now the computer's not working, but it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah, we're fine.
Vibes are up.
Yeah, we survived.
Yeah, like, Jesse's going to help me out. I'm sure he'll send me the audio, I hope. Jesse, if you're listening, please. But we're not. No, we're good. So the Trent Williams deal is not done, but this is a pretty significant offseason box that the 49ers needed to check.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the big thing. Okay, we talked, okay, the Brandon Ayuk deal gets done. That's great, but hey, if you have to play a game without Trent Williams, that's a major problem, especially going into a Monday night game against a New York Jets team that might have the best defense in football.
I found this weekend, too, like, they made some adjustments to the roster. They brought in they waived an offensive tackle. I'm like, wait, you can't waive anybody. You only have two.
Right.
That may have been, like, foreshadowing.
Right.
Then they signed some other rando, and you're like, okay, that might be more foreshadowing, but a different way.
Yes.
And so I expected this to happen, like, either they're going to announce, like, hey, he's going to sit out week one, or he'll be back. And they still only have three tackles, right? Oh, now they have four.
Yeah, so they have Colton McKivitz and Jalen Moore.
Yep.
And so they had a player named Sebastian Gutierrez who was with them throughout camp. He was on the practice squad. He's the player who got let go.
Okay.
To make room on the practice squad for Sam Ekwonu, the defensive end.
Yes.
And I saw that, and I had the same reaction you did. I went, oh, well, they just let go of their only internal offensive tackle depth. They must feel really good about Trent Williams getting this deal done.
Mm-hmm.
But then later in the day, when they placed Ricky Pearsall on the non-football injury list, we'll get to Ricky Pearsall in a second.
Yep.
When they placed him on the non-football injury list, that opened a roster spot that they used to sign offensive tackle Brandon Parker.
Okay.
Veteran offensive lineman who had been with them through training camp. And that made me go, oh, maybe this isn't close. Maybe they're worried Trent Williams is going to miss week one. So they added this internal depth after letting internal depth go. But now Trent Williams is reporting. So maybe they brought in Parker just as additional depth in case Williams wasn't ready or they weren't confident the deal was going to get done or whatever. But yeah, that was a roller coaster yesterday. Two moves that would normally be insignificant, but because of the question mark of the Trent Williams situation, everything felt seismic.
Yeah, totally. I'm intrigued to see if he's like in incredible shape and he walks in the door and it's just like, hey, I'm ready to be Trent Williams. Like, I don't think it's going to cost him like 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to take him that long to ramp up, but you hope not. I don't know.
Yeah, I think if he thought, I think Trent, while he wants to get paid and he wants guaranteed money, because that's the thing. I saw somebody in the chat, he said he's been paid. Totally. He wanted guaranteed money. He's 36. If he had stepped on the practice field and blown his Achilles on day one of camp, he's done.
Yeah.
It's very unlikely he's going to be back on the field and see another dime. So he wanted to make sure he had guaranteed money,
mm-hmm.
which makes sense. Again, we don't know how much it is. We haven't seen details of that deal come out yet. But that's what he was looking for. And so I think if he thought that he needed 2 weeks to play at a high level, 3 weeks to play at a high level, he would have agreed to whatever contract there was sooner. But I think this was all about, okay, want to be in the building by Tuesday, want to be on the practice field by Thursday, I'll be ready by Monday.
Mm.
I think that's what all of this has been about for Trent Williams.
I think he's been ready the whole time and he just didn't want to go to camp.
That's exactly where I'm at.
Yeah, we were talking about it before the show and, you know, like playing high school football, the worst thing about playing high school football is that you never actually got to play football.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you love playing the game of football, like if you mm-hmm. love going out and playing in the street with your family or, mm-hmm. or, you know, throwing the ball around, like there's so little to that mm-hmm. in playing actual football.
Mm-hmm.
So I always found it like miserable going to practice every day, going to, mm-hmm. You know, running all summer, going to the weight room, you know, zero period PE. Mm-hmm. It was like, when are we actually going to play the game?
Mm-hmm.
Outside of just running the same drill again and again.
Mm-hmm.
So I could get it like with Trent Williams, like, man, I've done this so many times and I don't need all that. And I don't want to be out there in the sun and I don't want to like.
Totally.
Yeah. As long as you can keep in good shape and you mm-hmm. actually have some sort of regimented mm-hmm. like plan to get on the field and hit somebody, I think he'll be fine. Like he's a guy at 36. If you don't know the drill at this point, you're never going to know it.
Yeah, I think there's enough continuity on the offensive line,
mm-hmm.
and he is a 15-year veteran. He knows better than anybody what he needs to do to be ready to play football at a high level, and that's why I'm certainly worried about Brandon Ayuk. I am deeply concerned that for the first 4 or 5 weeks we're going to look, oh hey look. 2 catches for 28 yards for Brandon Ayuk. Oh, he had a touchdown, but it was 3 catches and 40 yards. It's just he's kind of he's there, but he's not really there. Kind of like Nick Bosa last year.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
You see him, and there's a splash play here, and oh, man, he almost had a sack there, but didn't have a sack until week 3. Didn't have 3 sacks until week 8, right? Like, those are the two things I keep focusing on. Halfway through the year, he had 3 sacks, so it took him a while to really ramp up. I'm definitely concerned about that with Ayuk. I'm way less concerned with Trent Williams. The fact he's going to be in uniform, I imagine he'll play week 1. I would be really surprised if he didn't play week 1. I think all of this has been timed out, like you said. This is a guy who's been through the rigors of camp. He's a three-time first-team All-Pro the last 3 years. Year 15, he's age 36, he's got kids. He knows how to get his body ready. And I think on the offensive line, it is much easier to step in on 3 days of practice and be up to speed. I think it's far easier than it is as a defensive lineman, as a wide receiver, running back, whatever position it is.
Yeah, wide receiver, you need to have a connection with the quarterback. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we saw it with Ronnie Bell all through preseason. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't matter which quarterback it was, he had no connection. Mm-hmm. So either he's running the wrong routes, or he just has no feel, or he just hasn't been working with this group of quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. And that's what, like, stood out right away. When you're Brandon Ayuk, I assume that he had some of that, like, during the summer where he's working out with some of these guys. And he also has, like, a great connection with Purdy from their couple of years together here. But it makes you wonder, like, is there going to be, you know, separation issues? Mm-hmm. Is he going to look like the same explosive guy? Or is he going to look great because he hasn't gone through the rigors of camp? So there's always that possibility, too. I kind of want to see what it all looks like. And also, I think during camp, you know, Juwan Jennings had to do more, and Deebo Samuel had to do more. He had to do, like, different routes than what he's run, like, in past years. Even the one crazy catch he had, that's not, like, a route that we've seen him run a whole bunch. And so it makes you wonder if again, they were kind of preparing, like, for the possibility of him not being there. Mm-hmm. And, hey, we need you to do this and this and this, which you're not that all that comfortable with, but we might need you to do that because Ayuk's not here. So, yeah, maybe it helps in the long run.
Adam Schefter also reported this morning that Christian McCaffrey is expected to be back in practice today. Again, today a bonus practice, day off tomorrow. They get back to their regular, or get on to their regular practice schedule Thursday, Friday, Saturday for a Monday night game. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, day off Sunday, then they'll play Monday. But we will dive further into that with the 49ers, with Brandon Ayuk, with Trent Williams, with Christian McCaffrey. We got to talk about Ricky Pearsall.
Yeah.
News came down Saturday evening that Ricky Pearsall had been shot during a robbery attempt in Union Square in San Francisco. It was a 17-year-old suspect. There was a struggle for the gun. Pearsall was shot through the chest, clean through the chest, out the back. Did not require surgery, from what I understand.
Yeah.
Missed every potential vital organ, and he was released from the hospital on Sunday.
It's crazy because not only did it miss every vital organ, but we haven't heard about a broken bone or anything else. Like, because, like, look, if a bullet hits a rib on the way, it's going to shatter a rib or a scapula or whatever. Like, I mean, to me, it's absolutely incredible that, like, whatever happens here, he didn't get hit. I mean, he easily could have lost his life.
Yes.
And not only that, but to not only... he might be back on a football field in not that long, which is just absolutely crazy.
It's you said it there. The highlight here is that the kid is alive.
Exactly.
That is,
yes.
That's the highlight, right? Then you get to and he didn't require any kind of surgery.
Yeah.
He was out of the hospital in a day. The 49ers did place him on the non-football injury list, so he's sidelined for at least 4 weeks. But, dude, if he misses the season at this point, it's, hey, at least he's here.
Yeah.
That's going to be the thing that kind of underscores or the highlight of all of this. So, shout out to the first responders who were there, the police officers and the EMTs who got there and got him to the hospital in time. And the 49ers gave that update that, yeah, no surgery. He's in good spirits, and now back home, which is a good sign. I was shocked at how all over the place the reporting was on this at first.
It was wild.
It was wild. There was a report from I forget the person's name and their station, so I don't want to. A report from a TV reporter in San Francisco that this had happened. And then I saw Sal Castaneda was the next person I saw confirm it. And then you start to see these, okay, yes, it, okay, confirmed Ricky Pearsall was shot. But then you start seeing that he's in stable condition. No, he's in critical condition. He was shot in the chest. No, he was shot in the arm. He was shot multiple times. No, he was shot. And it was just, it was a mess.
Yes.
Trying to sort through all this. And I thought it was a really, because we've talked about this before, just kind of in the age of social media, how the, I was always taught in journalism school, and you're always taught about journalism, being correct is way more important than being first. And that apparently just went out the window on Saturday. Or people were, I don't know exactly how all of that happened, if it was people just making stuff up, or if it was police sources not knowing exactly what happened, or whatever the case. That made it 10 times worse. Because now you see, hey, he's okay, but can't believe that, because who knows what the heck happened? Was he shot in the arm? Was he shot in the chest? Was he shot once? Was he shot multiple times? Is he at the hospital? Is he in critical condition? Is he stable? Had no idea. I was, I was kind of surprised by the fact that, hey, something of major consequence is out there, and we couldn't quite get it right.
Yeah,
on the first try.
I think it's tough because, like, in this industry, you're constantly trying to get things right, but also it's always about getting it right,
mm-hmm.
right? So, like, the one thing in my entire career that stands out where people could say, "Well, you got that wrong," mm-hmm. is the DeMarcus Cousins signing, right? His extension. Right. So I broke that story. He's getting an extension. I had that cleared through his agent, another person in his party, and then everyone with the Kings that he was getting his extension.
Yeah.
Not only that, we went in the locker room and he acknowledged he was signing an extension with the Kings, and he started interviewing reporters. 2 weeks later, they trade him without the extension. I wasn't wrong in the moment.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, like, it's one of those things.
As you could.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I did every single step that you can possibly take.
And then some.
And then some.
Yeah.
I mean, I was literally on the phone with Larry Kuhn, who is like one of the salary cap gurus in the NBA, working out the exact dollar amount for the contract extension.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was going through every, I knew exactly what the dollar amount was before we broke that story.
Mm-hmm.
And then they decided to change paths and trade him 2 weeks later. Like, what are you going to do? Like, really, there's nothing you can do. But in the moment, no question.
Yeah.
I was 100% accurate and correct and double checked through like five people. And sometimes he,
yikes.
But in this situation,
well,
man, it's tough because, like, what if the bullet didn't do this? What if, like, this has a catastrophic ending,
mm-hmm.
and you've got it wrong the whole time.
Yeah.
I just, like...
Well, okay, and this is where, again, you talk about how difficult it is as a reporter in this situation, because, okay, your job is to have things as first as possible, right?
Yeah.
And if you're going to a police source, if you have a source in the SFPD,
mm-hmm.
and they tell you, hey, X, Y, and Z, you can't call the hospital.
Well, you can, but they're not going to give you anything.
Right, sure.
Yeah.
Unless you have somebody at the hospital who's going to illegally tell you what's going on.
Yeah, violate HIPAA laws.
Right.
Go ahead.
You can't. Right. So it's not like you can call the hospital.
Yeah.
So you're trying to just go through police sources, and it was like multiple reporters from multiple stations are putting out different things from the police, and different people within the police. It was wild, man. That's really tough because it's such a serious situation.
Yeah.
You want to make sure. And on top of this is kind of the point I was trying to get to. Again, I think everybody who was doing, I don't think anybody.
No, not maliciously making mistakes.
Right. I want to make that very clear. But then you have people who were being malicious.
Mm.
You have random people on Twitter posting these heinous things.
Wild, man.
That are just getting, because everybody's in panic mode because nobody knows exactly what's happening. And you're getting retweets smashed, and all of a sudden it's, wait, well, Sean Cunningham from Fox 40 said from the police that this happened. Okay, but random Twitter user said this other awful thing happened, so who are we to believe? Like, the reporter!
Yes, the reporter.
The guy whose job this is, who's citing the San Francisco Police Department.
Yes.
Not computer guy 0621.
Yeah.
Like, that. It was maddening.
Well, then it turned. I mean, I like watching it unfold. Like,
yeah.
Well, like we talked about the long snapper.
Mm-hmm.
He puts out a tweet like
Tabor Pepper
praying for his brother, right? Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, he's got all these people coming into his timeline, and he had to shut off comments because people are saying horrible things.
Yeah.
Like, well, this is what happens when you're in this city.
Yeah,
and it starts to get all this crazy political, and you're like, hey, wow. That's not what this should be about.
No, a kid just got shot, man.
Kid just got shot. A 23, 24-year-old kid just got shot. And, like, look, if you woke up today and you're not getting any updates from me anymore, it's because you're a bad person and I blocked you on Twitter this weekend. That might have happened. If you follow me and then all of a sudden I looked at some of the replies that some of these players were getting and you ended up getting blocked this weekend, it's because you're not a good person.
Yeah.
It's because you went out and you said stupid things on the internet. And for me, I don't want you to have the privilege of my coverage. So kick rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just totally bizarre, man. Totally bizarre.
Really odd. Really, really, really strange.
Yes.
Thankfully, though, again, the highlight of this is that Ricky Pearsall is A, alive, B, at home. I'm going to assume he's at home.
Unless Tim Ryan's right and he's in the weight room already, I don't know.
Yeah, T-Rock said that Ricky Pearsall's in the weight room. Maybe he is. Maybe he's going about his business. But either way, he's on the non-football injury list. He's out at least 4 weeks. And again, most importantly, he is okay. And that is the moral of that story.
That's right.
Shout out to Ricky Pearsall and shout out to the first responders who got on the scene and made sure that he got the treatment he needed as soon as possible. All right. We got to hit a break. You had a fantasy draft over the weekend. I don't care about that. I care about the nacho bar. We got to talk about that. Also, you and I are in a fantasy league together. We're co-managing a team at Odyssey Sacramento, and we have decided that if we win, we are going to spend that money with our listeners.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So you'll have a stake in that, and we're going to talk about our strategy and how we're going to do this, like, logistically, because we got to figure this out.
Okay.
So we'll do that. And why you should never be way overconfident in your favorite team. We've got a nightmare story coming up for you on the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Hey, if anybody has a plug on disposable cameras, let me know. We're doing a 30th birthday shindig with some friends down in Southern California. We're doing Disneyland one day, we're doing Universal one day, and then we're chilling one day. And really looking forward to it. And two of my friends who are going did disposable cameras at their wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally got those pictures developed and gave them to one of our other friends. We're like, wow, this is really cool. We should do this for SoCal when we go. We're going to get disposable cameras. It turns out disposable cameras are like $25 a whack now.
It's wild.
Insane. I was expecting I could get a dozen of these things for like $10. Nope. Wrong-o. They are you can get 10 of them for like $125. But I'm not trying to get 10 disposable cameras and spend more than $100 on it. So if anybody has a plug on disposable cameras, let me know.
So if you're a wedding planner out there,
yes. Yeah,
you have a stockpile.
I will purchase them from you for hopefully something less than $25 a camera.
That's amazing.
Hey, unrelated to anything we've been talking about or anything that was on the rundown, I have had a thought sparked by the Chatty House.
Uh-oh.
I think that we should, as a community, stop using the word hate for every single thing.
Okay. I don't hate that idea.
Thanks. I don't think Nate Duncan hates Domantas Sabonis.
No, Nate Duncan.
Nate Duncan
does not.
Might have quibbles with Domantas Sabonis as a player, and he might not think that he might underrate him or undervalue him or whatever. I don't think he hates him.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that somebody said that he tones down his Sabonis hate when you're on, because you were on the Dunked On podcast. Somebody said he tones down his. Unless I'm missing something, I don't think he actively hates the guy.
No, I don't think so either. But I also, like, even in general conversation with Nate, and like, look, he's very good at what he does. His Dunked On podcast is wildly, wildly successful.
Yes.
Like, probably, like, in the sports realm of, like, independent podcasts, probably one of the top, like, five successful podcasts.
Oh, yeah, he's been unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Him and Danny, like, do a really nice job, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there is, like, always an undertone with him that, you know, he's not sold out on Sabonis as, like, a top two or three player on your team.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always, like, kicked back. Even, you know, he's like, yeah, we could probably see a little bit of regression from Sabonis. I don't see any regression from Sabonis in the next 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Sabonis is who he is. Mm-hmm. And if you expect him to be more than what he is, then that's on you. Like, I've said this forever. Like, there's nothing Sabonis can do to, like, get taller or have longer arms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his limitations as a player are fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but the things that he does well are also, like, incredible. So, I don't know. I don't think he's going to slow down anytime soon at all.
Yeah, and that's fine. And I don't, like, if that's, I don't disagree.
Yeah.
But if somebody says they think Sabonis is going to regress, like, that's just, okay. I don't agree with the take. That doesn't come across as hate to me.
No.
If he comes out and says Domantas Sabonis sucks, he's terrible, then okay, that's just objectively wrong and you're hating at that point.
Yeah.
But also, just on the regression thing, what?
Yeah, like, how
has
he...
The dude has been minimum 18 and 12 for 5 years now.
I did, you know, he did bring up that Sabonis had, his true shooting number had dropped 3%. And I mean, it's factually correct, right? He did. His true shooting dropped from a 668 to a 637.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also ignoring the fact that, like, the year before with the Kings in his 15 games with the Kings, he had 603 and a 649 the year before that and 637. Like, the 668 might be an outlier.
Yeah.
And it is. If you look at his career, the true shooting that high was a bit of an outlier. And Sabonis he's a very, very efficient player.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't have any problems with, like, pointing at one stat, though, and saying, hey, this is why. I don't prescribe
what a weird
to
thing.
That. Yeah. So, I don't prescribe. Wait, it's probably because of his free throw percentage. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I think that's part of true shooting, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think it is.
It might not be. Measure of shooting efficiency takes into account 2-point field goals, 3-point field goals, and free throws. So if I'm going to point out why he regressed, why his number dropped, it's because he went from a 742 free throw shooter to a 70.4.
But I think in a scenario where Domantas Sabonis, let's say, regresses.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing that means statistically, because I don't think a player who is an all-NBA player at age 26 and 27 is suddenly going to fall off at age 28. That's just not how the sport works.
No.
So even if he regresses statistically, I think the only way you see I don't think you're going to see a significant dip in production. But even if you did see a little bit of a dip, so he was what, 19... almost 20, so he was 19.4, let's call it 19, 14, and 8 last year. 19 points, 14 boards, and 8 assists. We're doing some rounding.
Mm-hmm.
And the year before that, he was 19-12-7. Even if he dips to, let's say, 17-12-6, I think that's probably less a product of Domantas Sabonis coming down to earth as a player and more a product of DeMar DeRozan being around and the changes that the Kings are making because of that.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a dip in production like that, that's what I think it is. I can't imagine a world where 28-year-old Domantas Sabonis is suddenly just way worse at basketball than he's been for the last half decade.
I totally agree. And then the point I made with him too is like, okay, look, he led the league in rebounding the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
13.7, maybe there's somebody that catches him, right? And gets more rebounds mm-hmm. per game. But at the same time, what did the Kings do to actually help him as a rebounder? They went out, they got Devin Carter, who is the best rebounding guard in the draft, mm-hmm. right? Like, he becomes Josh Hart. Maybe he doesn't rebound the same way at the NBA level. But either way, he's out until at least January, more like February or March, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what did they do that would make you think that someone, DeMar DeRozan is not going to steal Domantas Sabonis' rebound numbers? So he's still going to be asked to do that same exact thing. And so for me, I don't see his rebounding numbers dipping at all. His assist numbers, maybe he shaves an assist off of that, but I still don't see it. So I'm
somewhere between 6.5 and 8.5 assists, probably.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, he's been the same player statistically for 5 years.
Yeah.
And why would you think he would regress at 28? I don't think he's going to. I don't think he'll regress his 28, 29, 30, 31 season. Maybe he starts to regress a little bit at 32. But that's 5 years from now.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sold on Sabonis. Like, look, you can say that he's not all NBA, that someone else can, that again, Victor Wembanyama might take his spot on all NBA and push him out. Although they, you know, again, it's not just centers. It's everybody mm-hmm. is in the same mix mm-hmm. now. But there's only so many all NBA spots.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible that Sabonis falls off all NBA, but it's also possible that he's on there for another 2 or 3 years because the Kings could be really good.
Yeah.
We just don't know.
Yeah. Anyways, the bottom line is, and this hit me the other day because somebody in the chat said that I hate Ricky Pearsall.
Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, no, I very much don't.
No.
There are players I dislike very much. Ricky Pearsall is not one of them. He's just a rookie who hadn't gotten to be on the field a lot. I didn't think he's going to be impactful this year. It's not hate.
Yeah.
It's my opinion.
Yeah.
I could definitely be wrong.
And even of all the players that I've ever covered in a Kings uniform, there's only one that I really don't like.
Mm.
So I'm not going to get into that.
Say, if you would like to let us know.
There's only one that I've ever had a problem with.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, like you're there to do a job, they're there to do a job, and they're just basketball players. They're just hoopers.
Just dudes.
Yeah, they are just dudes. Dude. Yeah, so that's about it.
Anyways, I got sidetracked. That's just a pet peeve of mine.
Yeah.
Guy hates him. He doesn't. I'd be wrong. You might be wrong about him.
Yeah.
I don't think he hates him. You had a fantasy draft this weekend.
I did.
How'd the nacho bar go?
Excellent as always.
Perfect. Someone brought the jalapenos?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. Where we have the fantasy draft every year, he went out and got jalapenos on his list of things
Perfect.
To get.
Out of it.
Yeah, so outside of that, yeah.
Where did we land on Thursday for our one-year anniversary show?
Is that tomorrow or is it Thursday?
Thursday, 9-5, September 5.
Okay. No, that's great for me. Let's do that.
Okay, perfect.
But is there people in the office on Thursday?
Don't know.
That might be the thing, like, because if I make a nacho bar,
Jesse will eat, Charlie will eat,
and it's just us eating nachos, that would be pretty sick.
I mean,
I'm in.
Are you against it?
No, I'm not.
What can I chip in? What can I bring? You want me to bring the jalapenos?
You can bring the jalapenos.
Okay.
I got everything else.
Just the jarred pickled jalapenos?
Yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I can do that.
No, I love a good nacho bar. It's like it's a staple of our draft. I've probably have been doing that for at least 10 years, probably longer than that, where I make nachos every single year. Like, everyone relies on it, but it's sad because, you know, slowly your draft starts to be less and less in person
mm-hmm.
and more people, like, you know, whether they move or you know, like, whatever.
Sure.
They're away for Labor Day
weekend. How many people are in the league?
12.
And how many people show up for the live draft?
This year we had 7.
Okay, so how does this work? So you have 7 people there for a live draft, which means a quick math, 12 minus 7.
5.
About 5 people.
Yep.
thank you. About 5 people not there. Are you just on your phones / laptops drafting?
Oh, no, we do a Yahoo live draft.
So, okay, so the people who aren't there get auto-drafted?
No, they're making their picks via Yahoo. Yeah, so...
Okay, so right, so everybody's sitting around on their computers.
Yeah, we're all hanging out, having a good time. We used to have, like, the giant sticker board and everything, okay. Like, for years and years. And we have the sticker board still with all of the years of drafts, like, mm-hmm. Which was always fun because, you know, you always have your sticker pickers, the guys who aren't prepared, and they go and stand up at the... Mm-hmm. Let's see. And they start moving through all the stickers trying to find someone
to
draft.
That's just dreadful.
It is.
You gotta make a play.
Yeah. So now, because the draft is so, you know, a draft only, it used to take like 4 or 5 hours. Mm-hmm. Now it's down to like maybe an hour and 45 or something.
Oh, nice. That's pretty efficient.
Yeah, it's pretty efficient. So we're just hanging out.
2 minutes per pick?
Nachos. 2 minutes per pick.
Nice.
19 rounds. 19 rounds? 17 rounds. Something like that.
19's a lot. Yeah. 12-person league?
Yeah.
Oh, you do IDPs though, huh? Individual defensive players.
Yep. I can tell you.
You and I have a fantasy draft tonight. So Odyssey Sacramento is doing a fantasy league. I'm hoping to get some people when we play them to get them in studio.
Oh, and just talk trash?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm in.
Yeah, that's my goal anyway. If we win, James and I are going to go to a bar / restaurant and you're all invited and it's drinks on us. So you guys should be rooting for us. We have a draft tonight, and you're the co-manager of the team. I don't know if that means you can be in the draft.
I don't.
Or if I'm just going to have to like call you and say, hey, we're up in 3 picks. Here's these players.
Yeah, it might kick. It might kick you out. Like, I think we can see how it works. So it's possible that because both of our emails are in there, that both of us can be on at the same time. But it's also possible that, like, one of us will get bumped every time. So, I don't know.
Okay.
We'll have to see.
I'll be in there on my phone. I've got dinner plans tonight.
Okay.
But I'll just be at my folks' house.
Okay.
So they know. It's not like a fancy dinner or establishment or anything. It's my folks' house. So I'll be able to have my phone out.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's what it is, then we'll just call each other a couple of picks before and say, okay, these are the kind of 3 players. What direction do we want to go?
Okay. Cool. Yeah, our draft is in 8 hours, 12 minutes, and 34 seconds, because I'm on the site. And I don't know what we're actually doing here. Like, I haven't looked.
What do you mean?
I don't know.
I got an email today that the rules changed.
I also got that email. I'm wondering, though, what exactly does... So we have 1 quarterback, 2 wide receivers, 2 running backs, a tight end, 2 wide receiver, running back, tight ends, 1 kicker, 1 defense... And 6 bench. I have 16 picks. Okay, so that's not horrible.
No.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
I think you and I have very different ways that we go about this.
Yeah, I just don't know what draft number are we? Do we know any of this?
I don't think the draft order's been set up yet.
Okay.
At least I don't think.
Yeah, I'm excited. Like, I don't know.
I do know I got thrown into the text... The group thread for this league?
A text thread?
Yes.
Well, I'm not on a text thread.
I'm working on it.
This is garbage.
And there's a guy left out now.
There's
a guy in there who I don't know.
Oh?
He's the only person who's not... He used to be with Odyssey Sacramento, and he's not anymore.
Okay.
And he's a huge Cowboys fan super freaking obnoxious about it.
Oh.
Like, just immediately started throwing Cowboys gifts and stuff into this group chat.
So I'm anti-group chat. We've talked about this.
Yeah, you're not a group chat guy.
Yeah.
Do you want me to just relay it to you, what's going on? Because nothing's happened. It's just been people figuring out whose number belongs to who, and then this one guy being like, yeah, Cowboys! It's like,
what
like,
is
okay,
that?
Guy.
Like, why?
I don't know.
Why you gotta
I've
be
never
that
seen,
way?
Like, look, when the way I've always operated is if... I don't talk a lot of trash anyways because I just don't.
That's not you.
No, it's not. Okay. It's not usually my bag. And if one of my favorite teams is not very good, I'm not going to run around letting everybody know how awesome they are. I'm just more of a realist.
Yeah.
And I tried it. So if I was a Cowboys fan, you would not catch me dead running into a group chat full of people I don't know going, yeah!
Cowboys.
Like, oh, for what? You haven't even been to an NFC title game in 30 years. And you're like, yeah!
Yeah. That's
pick your spots. Just pick your spots when you're talking trash, dude. That's all. Well, like that... right now, like even right now, Niner fan.
Yeah.
Like, hey, man. Like, yeah, you know, the last 5 years, five years, I guess, you know, the NFC title games, and you go to the Super Bowl a couple times, that's better than a lot of teams. But, hey, you haven't hoisted the Lombardi, so.
I'm really hoping in the draft we're around Kenny. Like, he's, like, the pick behind us.
I don't think
or...
Kenny's in the league.
He's not?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Because he has all these teams he won't draft players from. So, you know, like, if he's going to be on the turn.
Is that true?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, let's say you have the eighth pick, and he's the ninth pick, and then, is it 10-man league, or we are...
12.
Okay, so let's say we're the 10th pick, and he's the 11th pick. You could literally not, if you had guys on the board, you could avoid Cowboys, you could avoid Chiefs, you could avoid Seattle.
Is this real?
Yeah, he won't...
I need him to be in here for the handoff today.
He won't play... He won't have those guys on his fantasy team. No, he talks about it. Like, all right, you won't... That's fine.
I used to play with a guy who only did Nike athletes. I'm dead serious.
I had a guy
His team was ass. Because he would just pass up these dudes like, no, he wears Adidas. Like, yeah, so...
That's wild.
Only Nike athletes.
I have a guy who's been in our league forever, and he always gets on these weird trends. So One year, he wanted the number one player at every single position. But then outside of that, so he got a good quarterback. He got a really good wide receiver, a good running back. But then it got sideways. Like, he drafted a tight end too early. He drafted a kicker too early, and then he drafted each of his defensive positions way too early, but he had the number one guy at every position, and you're like, okay, but you're...
How would he have the number one guy at every position?
Well, but not, like, as high as he could with, like, the wide receiver and running back, you know?
He just took the highest-ranked player at that position.
Then he did it for every position,
so
until...
he filled out his roster first.
By, like, round 7 or 8, he had drafted most... He had drafted a position from... A player from every position. It's like, what are we doing here? You don't need to do more...
That stresses me out.
Yeah. Like, I don't draft defensive players until the very end of the draft, and even this time, we forgot to draft a defensive back, so we may not have one in week one, and we'll figure that out.
Yeah, you just pick one up.
Yeah, there's a waiver wire, and now it's saying you won't get your stuff waiver pickups until the 5th, and I'm like, I don't know what's happening.
Huh.
So, I don't know, we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
Interesting.
I love playing fantasy football, though.
It's a good time. Yeah. Speaking of which, hey, real quick, want to announce right now, Fantasy Fridays are back this year. Faraz Siddiqui, beginning this Friday, every 10:30, Faraz Siddiqui of Upper Hand Fantasy. It's an Odyssey podcast. You can get it on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Faraz is going to join us every Friday at 10:30 to answer our questions, to answer your questions. I think we might take phone calls this year.
Ooh.
If you want to call in and chat with Faraz, but of course we take your questions from the chat, and it's always a fun time. It's a really fun segment every single Friday, 10:30 a.m. right here on The Insiders. A big shout out to Faraz again. That starts this Friday to get you ready for the season opener in week one. I guess the season opener is technically Thursday, but for the real week one to begin on Sunday. Hey, speaking of being overconfident in your favorite teams and picking your spots to talk trash, did you hear about this Florida State fan on Twitter?
I didn't, but you did.
@321 Noel. That's Noel, N-O-L-E. If you want to go look him up, you're not going to be able to find him because he has deleted his account.
Still?
Because this FSU fan, Florida State, tweeted after Florida State lost their season opener. He then tweeted, they lost their season opener to Georgia Tech out in Ireland. He tweeted, If Florida State loses to Boston College this weekend, I will eat dog doo-doo out of a red Solo cup with a spoon and post a video of me doing it, which is disgusting, first of all. Why would you put that into the universe? What are you doing? What's your goal? Because here's the two ways this can go. One, they win, and now you're just gross. And it's like, okay, cool, man. You were confident that they were going to win, and they won. Nice. Like, you're the number 10 ranked team in the country, and you beat an unranked BC team. Cool. Or they lose, and you have to delete your account because everybody's like, post the video.
Post the video, bro.
Don't do this. I beseech you not to do this ever.
Nobody wants to see the video either way.
Nobody wants to. Yeah, right. If that video drops, your boy is not watching it at all. Not even, dude, 100%, the full-blown gag reflex.
No.
I just, dude, there is zero benefit to doing this.
Zero.
It's the same thing getting a tattoo of the Super Bowl with your team as the champion before the season. Okay, you go viral if they win it.
Yeah.
And for 2 days, you've got local news stations calling you. Maybe ESPN posts about you on Twitter, but by the next week, you're just a guy who has a tattoo. If you don't, then you're going to get all that same attention, but now you're going to be an idiot with a tattoo.
Yeah, it's wild.
I just don't understand it. My emotions are already rising and falling an unhealthy amount based on other adults playing sports. They're playing games,
yeah,
and I am going to let it affect my day. I've just locked into that every Sunday for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes Monday, sometimes Thursday.
For the next
until I'm dead.
Yep.
So for the next 5 or 6 years. No, fingers crossed it's a lot longer than that.
Yeah.
I'm in. The A's, the Sharks, the Warriors, whoever, like, I'm just gonna, you know what? My mood is going to be impacted by these teams for the rest of my life. That's just how it's going to be. I don't need to also throw this in. I don't need to also up the stakes.
That's a big upping of stakes.
It's outrageous.
It's outrageous.
It's so dumb.
It's funny. You brought up the A's. I watched a game like twice this weekend. I was watching A's mm-hmm. games. Maybe it was more than that. I think I saw them win a walk-off, and I saw them lose a walk-off. What day? It was Saturday. It was Sunday. Mason Miller.
Gave up the three-run jack and extras.
To lose it, right?
That was tough.
Yeah. Anyway, I keep looking at it. I'm like, who is that? Like, I've been mm-hmm. watching enough A's all season long that I should know everybody. And then I even know quite a bit of their minor. And I'm like... Mm-hmm. Who are these people? Just random people.
Dude, those September call-ups, man. Roster expansions.
But like a 28-year-old dude playing third base, you're like, who is that guy? And I look and they picked him up like a week ago.
The great Tristan Gray.
Yeah, he was waived by somebody. And
1-for-15 in his pro career.
Oh, yeah. He was DFA'd or whatever. And mm-hmm. and all of a sudden they scooped him up off waivers. And there he is. He's playing. Like, man, you don't have anyone in your farm system that could possibly help you more than a 28-year-old dude. Not to like besmirch the good name of Tristan Gray, but
the great Tristan Gray.
Yeah, like I'm good for him. He's made it back to the bigs.
1,000%.
But seriously, you don't have anyone else in the minors that possibly could use some at bats down the stretch.
What's it? The A's have hit their over. They're in the final month of the season, and they're going. They're seeing what they got. Hey, Tristan Gray, you've had 14 at-bats here. Get out there and see if you turn into something.
See if you turn into Brent Rooker.
Yeah, like maybe.
Maybe we stumble upon gold. Wild. All right, I think we have to go to break.
We do have to go to break. We've got some NFL stuff coming up for you. And I've got a couple more Kings things I want to get to.
Oh.
We randomly got into that Sabonis thing, but I've got more Kings to get into as well. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. Second hour coming up on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center.
Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two. I'm Kyle Madsen. He's James Hamm. They are Jiffy Lube, and they sponsor the show. We're hanging out with you until noon, then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and KC. Good news, James, my computer's working.
Oh?
Bad news, it was not working in time for me to start recording this hour.
Oh.
Good news, Jesse's going to help us out.
Okay.
Shout out to Jesse, the producer for D'Lo and Casey.
I don't have to...
You'll be uploading the podcast.
Oh, dang it.
Sorry, man.
Dang it.
Sorry.
Okay, so...
he's going to send me the audio.
Brennan Ayuk and Christian McCaffrey are back at practice on Tuesday. And then someone was saying that Trent Williams is off the side and will take part in individual drills.
Nice. All right. All right. Who reported that? My Twitter's not working, so I can't go look at any of this.
I'm trying to think. Where is this at? Oh, now mine's not working.
Great. Perfect. No, this is really good.
Spectacular. Spectacular.
This is cool. I love this for us.
Yeah, I think the initial report I read was from our friend Nick Wagner.
Great. Perfect.
Yeah.
I'm going to go check. I hope I can access his tweets right now. There we go. Nick Wagner, friend of the program. Back at practice today. Christian McCaffrey, Aaron Banks, Juwan Jennings, Tatum Bethune, the rookie linebacker from Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
Isaac Arendo working on the side. Did not see D. Winters or Yeter Gross-Matos.
Yeah, it's great to hear that McCaffrey is taking part.
Yeah, so that was one of the things that I was always very confused on, because I got the idea, and then talking to people who are also around the team, I kept getting the idea that the McCaffrey calf injury and his absence from the preseason was more precautionary than anything.
Yeah.
Like, he strained his calf, and hey, they're just going to put him on ice until practices start for the regular season to make sure he's fully healthy and good to go, because they don't need to see anything out of Christian McCaffrey in training camp in the preseason, right? But I kept seeing, listening to NFL podcasts and fantasy football podcasts that are like, yo, hey, Christian McCaffrey could be in trouble week one. And if he's injured now and he's going to keep, and McCaffrey's back today for their bonus practice, and it looks like he's going to be good to go for week one, which I think was always the plan.
I think it was always a plan too. I do
felt very alarmist.
I do understand that, like, if you're talking fantasy football, very specifically, I mean, it's a 17-week season. He's a guy with a long history of injury,
mm-hmm.
and it's a calf injury which can, like, take a long time to heal.
They can, yeah.
And so I think a lot of talk was about, you know, make sure that if you're going to draft McCaffrey, or if you're getting deep into a draft, make sure you take Mason.
Mm-hmm. Like Jordan Mason.
Yeah, Jordan Mason. Make sure you have his backup. Yeah, we also have from Nick Wagner, Trent Williams was not on the practice field during very brief open portion of practice. Obviously needs to get rework contract finished before he participates. Would think Thursday is more likely target.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me. My guess is Trent Williams is playing week one. I think that he believes he needs 3 days to get ready. He'll practice for 3 days and be on the field against the Jets.
Could you imagine thinking to yourself, I need 3 days and I can be ready to start an NFL game?
No.
No, never.
No, I can't.
No. No, I mean, I can't either. Like, the thought of that, like, oh, I can just turn this thing on and go.
Crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that's wild. That's wild.
Well, when you're a Hall of Famer and you're playing at a high level at age 36 and you're 15, like, sure, man, as long as he's on the field.
He's done all the work.
No, I will. Look, here's the thing. I think all these guys playing, Christian McCaffrey coming back, Brandon Ayuk coming back, Trent Williams coming back, I think it gives the Niners a lot better chance to beat the Jets in week one. If Trent Williams wasn't playing, I didn't think they were winning.
Mm.
But hey, if he's going to be back, but there's a very real scenario here that we've seen play out when Deebo Samuel held in-ish,
mm-hmm.
When Brandon, not Brandon Ayuk, but when Nick Bosa last year, we saw them get off to kind of these slow starts and have these up and down years. There's a very real chance that Trent Williams gets on the field in week one, and man, you know what, he gave up two sacks, and he gave up a tackle for loss on a big third and one play where they ran behind him, and he missed his block. Like, all of that stuff's on the table. We already talked about Brandon Ayuk. Yeah, week one, he had three catches on six targets for 28 yards and just was overall not effective. Like, there's definitely still a chance. Well, I think things are falling into place for the Niners right now. Mm-hmm. All of these things that when we talked 3 weeks ago and we said, hey, are the vibes bad right now? Hey, it's Christian McCaffrey and it's Brandon Ayuk and it's Trent Williams and, man, they lost a preseason game. Like, the vibe's just down. They're canceling joint practices because everybody's hurt. Is this going to be a problem? But, hey, going into week one, you get Christian McCaffrey back, you get Brandon Ayuk back, Trent Williams back. Okay, things are kind of falling into place, and that's nice. That's nice that these things that have cast this pall over the 49ers entire offseason are now taken care of, and they're good to go, and they're locking in for week one. But at the same time, it's very much on the table that, you know what, yeah, they're there and they're locked in, but hey, Christian McCaffrey was needed a little ramp up, and Trent Williams needed 3 weeks to be back at his peak performance, and Brandon Ayuk didn't have a 100-yard game until week 14. There's this stuff is maybe this is the pessimist in me, but while this is all great that this is all falling into place the Tuesday before the regular season, there's still a very real chance that these holdouts, hold-ins, and injuries wind up affecting the 49ers once the season starts.
Oh, yeah, especially week one.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not playing, it's not a cupcake schedule. No. You start the season with one of the best defensive teams in the league.
Yep.
And I think with a quarterback that's motivated to show that he's not over the hill and washed in Aaron Rodgers.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, this is going to be a good game. This is a team with what many think, like, fantasy-wise, is, like, number one, number two running back in the league in Breece Hall.
Yep.
I mean, this is a team with, like, Garrett Wilson, a very, very really good wide receiver. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got very nice specialty players all up and down. This is a dangerous, dangerous team. And it's a team with, with a head coach that everyone knows.
Yeah.
It's a former defensive coordinator for the 49ers. This is a motivated team.
Probably coaching for his job.
Yeah, all season.
First six weeks. So, look, you mentioned the schedule. They have New York on Monday. And I wrote about this at NinersWire.com. Check it out. I wrote about how, hey, you know what? It's actually good they get this Monday game because it extends out time to get guys healthy. It extends out time to get Trent Williams back in the building. That's all great that they play Monday. But then their quick turnaround to a 10 a.m. start Sunday at Minnesota. Then they fly back home and they play the Rams in L.A. the next week. I'm of the mind the Rams are going to be good this year. They get the Patriots, who might be the worst team in the league. They get them at home. They get Arizona at home, division game. Always play the Niners tough.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're at Seattle on a short week. Then they're home against Kansas City, with Kansas City coming off their bye. They're home against Dallas the next week. Then they get a bye. Then they're at Tampa Bay, home Seattle, at Green Bay, at Buffalo.
Ooh.
For Sunday Night Football. Then they come home to play Chicago. Then they're home L.A. On a Thursday. So they have that Rams game on a short week. Then they go to Miami on December 22nd. Then they come home and play the Lions on Monday Night Football before wrapping up their schedule on January 5th at Arizona on a Sunday.
That's not a lightweight schedule.
That's a brutal schedule, dude.
Yeah.
If Arizona is even a little bit good, which I think they will be, I'm pretty high on Arizona this year.
Okay.
I'm also pretty high on the Rams. I don't think Arizona's going to go like 12-5 or anything crazy like that. I just don't think they're going to be easy to beat.
Okay.
I think you're probably looking at like 7-10, 8-9 for them. And I think they're going to be a tough beat. I think the Rams are going to be good. I've said on this show, if I'm betting, I would pick the Rams to win the division. And then Seattle is just, that's going to be Seattle. They have a new head coach. I'm interested to see what they look like. Maybe they're terrible. I don't know. But I'm always going to project out that Seattle's going to be pretty good until I see otherwise.
Yeah.
So, you get your own division, which might be one of the best two divisions in football. And then Kansas City, Dallas, at Buffalo. That's a gauntlet that starts with this Monday night game against New York and then the short turnaround at Minnesota. Like, man, that just, and you're trying to ramp guys up. There's just not really a good stretch of games where you're feeling, okay, yeah, they're going to, a lock in 5-0, lock in 4-1.
Yeah, I'm not a huge
can't get there.
Like, I don't like where Minnesota's at as a team right now.
Sure, Sure, sure,
so,
sure.
So that's one where it's like, okay.
That's more the spot than the opponent.
Yeah,
sure.
you don't want to lose because of the spot. Mm-hmm. You know, that's always like a concern, like
yeah.
for sure. But at the same time, that's not a game that I'm circling and going, hey.
No, it's hey. No. That's the one of the lighter games on their schedule for sure.
Yeah. I also, I mean, that week four against New England, that's not horrible.
No.
I want to see what the Cardinals and the Seahawks look like. So I could see them for 6 weeks of the season. I don't know, 4-2.
Four and two.
The first 6 weeks? Maybe 5-1.
Hmm.
No?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I just I don't know, man. Here's where my hang up is. I thought because they started slow in 21, they started slow in 22. Mm-hmm. And okay, maybe that's just this team. And I thought last year, man, they got to go to Pittsburgh. Week one, it's Mike Tomlin. Pittsburgh's offense was awesome in the preseason. I was pretty bullish on Pittsburgh, and they ended up not being very good. And the Niners smoked them. And the Niners got out to a super fast start and were the number one seed in a year where I thought, man, I think they're going to struggle. So I look at this and I go, man, I would take 4-2 the first 2 weeks and feel great about it.
Yep.
But maybe they'll go 5-1. Maybe they're going to be awesome and they'll be 6-0.
Yeah.
But I think you start stacking up the Super Bowl hangover aspect of this. You start stacking up Trent Williams getting in late, Brandon Ayuk getting in late, Christian McCaffrey getting in late after suffering a calf injury.
Mm-hmm.
You're starting at least one new player. Two new players in your secondary, and possibly three, depending on Talanoa Hufanga. You're starting a new linebacker in Dre Greenlaw's spot next to Fred Warner. You have zero depth at defensive end. These are all the things that when somebody wants to be super bullish on the 49ers, they want to be like, yes, they're going to go 5-1, 6-0 those first 6 weeks. I'm looking at a 13-4 schedule right here. Maybe. They have on paper, they have the talent to be that good.
Yeah.
They have the talent to steamroll their way to a number one seed, no doubt. But when you start stacking up potential adversity, it's like, man, that's a lot to overcome. And I think you're going to see it in week one against the Jets. I don't think that's going to be an easy game whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. I want to see how they come out. Like, who are you? Like, what do you look like from the jump? Are you a team that is serious about this season, or are you a team that has really got lost in the weeds all the way through preseason?
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, like, can you come out and like hit your stride early in the season, or is this going to be a ramp up? And if it's a mm-hmm. ramp up, the second half of the schedule to me is where it really gets difficult. You got those two games with Kansas City and the Cowboys, but I mean, I could at Green Bay, at Buffalo, the Bears are going to be much improved. That at Miami, and then against Detroit near mm-hmm. the end of the season. Again, that could be two losses. So what you don't want to do is go 5-3 to open the season. And next thing you know, you're looking at maybe 11-5.
Mm-hmm.
That's or 11-6.
Yeah, if you start slow and you're 4-4 going into your bye week in week 9.
Oh, no.
To make the playoffs, assuming 10-7, you got to go 6-3.
Mm.
And you're at Tampa Bay, home Seattle, at Green Bay, at Buffalo, home Chicago, home Rams, at Miami, home Detroit, at Arizona. You got a 6-3 in those 9 games.
Mm.
They can. I'm sure there's, I don't have the chat up because I'm looking, but I'm sure there's people in the chat right now, like, that's easy work.
Yeah.
And sure, like, maybe. I'm not saying they can't go on that kind of run, or that they can't start faster, that they can't go 13-4. They 100% can. But when I start, you know, the relief of, oh man, the Brandon Ayuk thing's done and the Trent Williams thing is done. Oh man, and Christian McCaffrey's coming back, and you see all these guys getting healthy. Okay, feel really good about feel good. It's like, I don't know if I feel good. I feel better.
Yeah,
feel better than I did last week. But you start again factoring in the Super Bowl hangover of this, and you start factoring in the schedule. I just maybe it's just me. Maybe it's a me problem.
It's but tough, just, man. I don't know what it's going to look like. I'm excited to see it, though, because this is still a great team.
It should be. I'll tell you what.
Well-assembled.
I'll tell you what. This is, I think for this specific group, I think this is the end of their Super Bowl window for this specific group.
Okay.
And I say that because I think you're going to see some changes this offseason to the core group of players, where maybe Deebo Samuel's gone. Maybe George Kittle's gone. Maybe it's Charvarius Ward and Deamador Lenore are both out the door. Maybe Dre Greenlaw winds up leaving in free agency. Maybe it's Aaron Banks. Maybe he's gone. Like there's all these players who have been kind of part of this team for the last 2, 3, 4 years who could be out of here in the offseason. And if they come out this year and they go 12-5 and they play the Chiefs tough, maybe they lose to the Chiefs and play them tough and they go into Buffalo and they beat Buffalo and they beat Detroit again. And you just like, man, this is once again just the best team in the NFC. They had a couple of hiccups there, but 12-5, this is a really, really good team. Then I'd feel better about their Super Bowl window extending into whatever is the next version of the 49ers.
Mm-hmm.
But man, you come out this year and you go 4-4 to start, and you finish the year like 9-8. It'd be really tough to be optimistic about the next 5.
Yeah. That's where it's going to get tough, and that's where you have to make difficult decisions.
Yeah, like, man.
How do you like? That's like you're going to put a whole bunch of money into a quarterback. Like, where are you going? Like, that's where you're looking at like the grand scheme of things.
Mm-hmm.
What does your team look like? Mm-hmm. Right? How do you build this thing out? It's going to be tough.
Well, and that's Tom Pelissero from NFL Media tweeted today, like, hey, if anybody's wondering how the Niners are getting all these deals done, it's perks of having a quarterback making $1 million.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's part of it for sure, but it's partly because they've kicked money down the road and some of these players are going to still cost them money into like 2028 and 2029 when they're not on the team anymore.
Yeah.
That's part of the way they've done it. But the other way they've been able to do it is be signing only really, really high-end players, right? They only go spend big on their own guys when they don't go give Mike McGlinchey a top of market deal.
Mm-hmm.
They don't pay to keep Laken Tomlinson around at left guard. Like they don't pay for guys like that.
Yep.
They're not going to pay Talanoa Hufanga. They haven't had to pay. Charvarius Ward is making decent money, but he's not like top of market. You know, they're allocating their money in the right places. But once you give Brock Purdy, once you commit that $60+ million a year to Brock Purdy,
mm-hmm.
It dramatically alters the way you can build your team, which in turn, when we're talking Super Bowl window, affects the Super Bowl window. But it also now puts the onus on the front office to, hey, you're going to lose Deebo Samuel, but you're going to have to replace him. You're not going to find a Deebo Samuel replacement directly, I don't think. But you got to find another good receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, George Kittle is 34 and no longer effective. You got to find a way to replace him. You're churning through safeties every 4 years because you can't sign one long term because it's too expensive, but you got to keep finding capable players there.
Yep.
Like this is going to shift where, okay, the window might be there because you still have some of these really good vets, Fred Warner, Nick Bosa, Brandon Ayuk. Those guys are going to be around, but in 3, 4 years, when it's Brock Purdy and Brandon Ayuk and that's kind of it for guys under 30, that's when this is going to get really tough. But again, that's 4 years from now.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I also, like, how much should they save this season and moving forward? Like, the Ayuk deal, like, you're going to have to pay him eventually, but his cap number for this year is way low.
Yeah, it's like less than $6 million, I think.
I think his cap figure is like $1 million, but then his signing bonuses and stuff like that's a little bit more.
Yeah.
So I'm looking, right now, their cap space is at $49.5 million
mm-hmm.
in cap space right now. They're the team with the second highest cap space.
Go look at 2025.
Is it just like hideous?
It's a disaster.
Yeah.
It's such a mess in 2025. And that doesn't even factor in whatever Trent Williams' contract is going to look like. And then whatever Brock Purdy's contract is going to look like.
$40 million over right now in the red for next year.
Oof.
But can't you carry over that $50 million from this year?
Yes. It rolls over. But that doesn't mean they suddenly have $10 million in space.
Okay.
Yeah, they've done an okay job managing the cap for sure. But it's just when you start spending $60 million on one player instead of less than $1 million, like that just fundamentally changes the way you can build your team. But that's why this year matters so much.
Yeah.
Hey, there's all this adversity with Trent Williams and Brandon Ayuk and And Talanoa Hufanga may or may not be in the lineup week one. And what's Christian McCaffrey up to? How's his calf doing? It's like, yo, you're about to pay Brock Purdy to overcome all of this.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I'm watching for this year. Is I think they're going to run into some injury adversity. They didn't have a ton last year, so I'm going to factor in some of that. And can Brock Purdy be that dude who kind of overcomes what everybody says about him? Says, hey, yeah, he's really good in this system with these specific players, but yeah, hey, if Brandon Ayuk gets off to a slow start, can Purdy lean on Deebo Samuel? Can he lean on Juwan Jennings? Can he continue to find ways to make plays down the field if Brandon Ayuk's struggling a little bit out the gate? If Trent Williams misses some time, can Brock Purdy figure out a way to be efficient and not turn the ball over when Trent Williams is not in the lineup? Going to be a big deal. If Deebo Samuel misses time, can they lean on Juwan Jennings? Can he lean on Brandon Ayuk? Can he help elevate the players around him if they hit some adversity? Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to hit some this year, and that's going to be spotlight on number 13. And I think all of it is going to come down to him.
I think he's going to be really good. I'm like, what he looked like last year, and then I just feel like he's one of those guys. And like the comparison that I always make with him, he reminds me a lot of Drew Brees. He's just like relaxed in the pocket. He just knows how to manage the game, but not a game manager.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's an ability here for him to push 4,500, 5,000 yards, like in the heart of his career. Like not this year. I mean, I think he can hit 4,500 yards this year because he finished last year with, 43 and sat out the last game. So there's potential there for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's just one of those guys that gets it and brings like a calming influence to a team. And I think he's going to be picking defenses apart for the next, 15 years.
We're going to learn. This is the year. This is the tipping point year for him for me where maybe he is the rising tide that lifts all boats. But last year, a lot of things just kind of went the Niners' way.
Mm-hmm.
And then went to the Super Bowl in part because the Lions receivers dropped passes. And because they had a cornerback had a ball bounce off his face mask and Brandon Ayuk made a miraculous catch. Like, they had a lot of things break their way in that NFC title game to even go to a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at number 13 this year, man. Like, this to me has got to be the year that he shows, hey, without a doubt, this is a top 10 to 12 quarterback in the league, regardless of situation. Because I think the situation's going to warrant him being more of a playmaker than he needed to be last year.
Yeah. Well, hey, look.
Learn a lot.
We are going to learn a lot, but I have some faith in what's happening here.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Kinda.
Sort of.
We'll see. we got to hit a break. That's James. I'm Kyle. Jiffy Lube's the sponsor. The Kings had a kind of, I'll explain here in a second, but they had a boring offseason a little bit in kind of the best way.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about this ongoing shift that we've seen for the Kings. He's James. I'm Kyle. We're the Insiders on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
I think Justin Herbert is the quarterback I'm most torn on in the NFL.
Really?
Yeah. Because I'm out on him at the moment. But I don't, here, this is the way I can explain it. I'm not out on Justin Herbert, the person / quarterback. I'm out on the analysts who have just decided that he's a top five guy already.
Yeah.
His skill set is crazy. He's mobile. He has one of the strongest arms in the league. He will make some of the sickest throws that you'll see in a season. But there's just more to it for me than just, wow, man, run fast and throw a ball far.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit what a lot of the oh my God, Justin Herbert's amazing. He's so good. Look at, imagine how good Team X would be with Justin Herbert instead of, like, maybe, but what is, I've seen people say that the Dolphins would be better with Justin Herbert instead of Tua. And that might be true. That maybe.
Yeah.
And this is my gripe with Justin Herbert. Again, it's not Justin Herbert because I see the vision. I see, man, a version of the Dolphins offense with a guy with Justin Herbert's pure skill set. Yeah, that might be crazy. But what if he doesn't run it as effectively as Tua does? And maybe he makes a couple of mind-blowing, spectacular throws, and holy crap, he's throwing the ball deep to Tyreek Hill, and everybody watch out. But I just, he hasn't done enough for me yet. He's put up the numbers, and but at some point you got to win a little bit.
Yeah.
And I've said this before, if you're going to be a guy who's, he's top five and he's this good, and you're supposed to be able to overcome all this stuff, not having all these advantages that Brock Purdy has, if you can't do that, then I can't get there yet. Like I said, I see the vision, and maybe Jim Harbaugh's the guy to get him over that hump, and we see Justin Herbert by the end of this year, consensus top three dude. It's Mahomes, it's Josh Allen, it's Justin Herbert. Sure. Mm-hmm. And that's why I say I'm not out on Justin Herbert, because I think that's still on the table. But I got to know what's happened in his career that makes anybody think that Justin Herbert is already that dude.
I think it's almost like he did himself a disservice in his second season in the league. He threw for 5,000 yards. He threw for 38 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Like, he was incredible. But they go 9-8. The next season, right, they went 10-7. His stats weren't, and he wasn't nearly as good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 4,700 yards, but 25 touchdowns, 10 picks. Like, his...
So
it feels like he is one of those guys. But I always kind of feel the same with Burrow. Like, he's good.
Mm-hmm.
But is he great? Is he top three? Everyone just throws him in top three. Mm-hmm. And I want to see what Josh Allen looks like this year,
mm-hmm,
without any of his wide receivers. They did the same thing with Herbert. Herbert has none of it. Like, they just went out and traded everybody.
It's
like,
crazy.
Yeah. Like, see you, Keenan Allen. We're, mm-hmm, not going to pay you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what, Mike Williams?
Mike Williams.
Like, everyone's out the door.
It's Josh Palmer and Ladd McConkey.
Yeah, and no more Austin Eckler out of the backfield. Mm-hmm. Like, you just wiped out like his safety blanket. So, mm-hmm, let's see what he looks like. But that's not a good position to be in, like, starting fresh. And I feel the same with Josh Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Allen's going into the season. Yeah, you got your tight end. Your, mm-hmm, running back was good last year, not, mm-hmm, great but good. But your wide receivers are now gone. There, mm-hmm, is no more Diggs. There is, they're just, all of them are gone. We're starting over.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to see if they can do. Like, I think last year we watched, like, the greatest quarterback that we've seen in a long time, mm-hmm, outside of, Tom Brady,
mm-hmm,
lead his team to the Super Bowl with no wide receivers.
Yeah.
And you could tell they realized it because that's not what they're doing this year.
Yep.
They went out and
major moves,
brought in major pieces to help him. It's like, mm-hmm, hey, look, you brought in actual NFL wide receivers. Yeah. They might not be the best of the best, but I'll take a Juju, mm-hmm, Schuster-Smith, and I'll take Hollywood Brown. Like, give me some, and some young guys that have, mm-hmm, some talent. Okay.
Yeah.
He can build this, and he had a year of working with Rashee Rice, and so maybe he can put something, yeah, together. But I don't know that there's another quarterback in the NFL that could have walked into last season and done anything close to what Patrick Mahomes did with the same exact skill set, and that's what it feels like they're doing with Herbert. It feels like they're doing with Josh Allen. Like, well, Mahomes did it. He got through. You guys figure it out. Figure out how to make these wide receivers great.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, man. If that's really what teams are doing, and I want to get to the Kings here in a second, but if that's what teams are doing, if that's legitimately the Chargers and Bills said, hey, we have a Mahomes type of guy, so we'll just cut it short at receiver, they are horribly mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where I can't be out on Justin Herbert, because their defense has been abominable. I'm not sure their offense has been conducive to him and his skill set. His average depth of target is always super low, which doesn't make sense for a player with his skill set. Maybe it's the offense, and again, maybe it's him, I don't know. But that's why I'm excited to see with Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman in there if they can help him expand that and become the quarterback that kind of takes that major leap.
Mm-hmm.
Because you throw for 5,000 yards and 38 touchdowns in a season, you're not bad. He's obviously not a bad player, but is he going to be that guy that eventually gets over the hump and wins Super Bowls or a Super Bowl? I think if the Bills and Chargers think they can just replicate what the Chiefs did, they are sorely mistaken.
Oh,
the Chiefs have a generational quarterback, B, the best receiving tight end of all time, the best head coach doing it right now, maybe the best defensive coordinator doing it right now, and they had a loaded defense last year. Like they their formula was not Patrick Mahomes and offense driven.
No.
He made plays in the Super Bowl for sure, but they had to go run it back with Mecole Hardman midseason, and it was a mess. And you see, they're not trying to do it again.
No,
it was not on purpose.
No, it's funny too. Sure. Someone mentioned that I can't remember who it was in the chat that Herbert needs to show that he's better than Trevor Lawrence. Man, I got to be honest. Trevor Lawrence, like he's done a lot more than Trevor Lawrence. Like,
see, and that's okay. And that's where I am. I run afoul of the rest of this station when it comes to Trevor Lawrence. I think Trevor Lawrence is freaking awesome.
Yeah,
there is a video that goes viral on Twitter once a week. It's like 6 minutes. It is 6 minutes of Jaguars pass catchers dropping touchdowns last year. Like that, so. it was a major problem, and he had a bunch of interceptions where it were bouncing into guys' hands and then to defenders. It was just the Jags have not put him in a good position. But I think I'm in the same spot with Trevor Lawrence that I am with Justin Herbert, where like I'm not ready to crown them yet, because I mean at some point you got to produce. Like at some point you've got to do it, and you got to go win playoff games.
Yeah,
regardless, like it's a must. Like that's the whole point. And if you're not winning playoff games, like I'm sorry, I can't get behind the idea of, oh, well, if you just put Trevor Lawrence with the Niners, then they're gonna win the Super Bowl every year. Like possibly. But I gotta see this dude make a deep run first.
Yeah, I have a tough time believing that.
Like, yeah.
He's gotta prove he's more than Derek Carr at this point, like as a player. And I mean, unfortunately, I mean, when you throughout your career, you got 58 touchdowns and 39 interceptions.
Like I said earlier, there's stuff that I'm not putting on Herbert, and that's stuff I'm not going to put on Trevor Lawrence either.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is Herbert showed it, like his stats were just so incredible.
Yeah,
early on, and he did go 10 and 7.
And he's played through a bunch of injuries. Like he's been. Yeah. He's dealt with a ton of adversity in his career for sure. And that's why I can't be out.
But there's too many times where he's in a big moment and does something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And again, talk about like
Derek Carr. What was it, a 24-point lead in the playoffs?
Yeah. Like he's made some Derek Carr throws where you're like, oh man.
It's tough.
All you had to do is not do that and you would have won.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tough stuff.
Let's talk some Kings real quick before we get out of here. We got the handoff coming up in about 5 minutes. Real quick, salute to TJ McConnell and the Pacers. T.J. McConnell, 4 years, $45 million. He agreed to that contract with Indiana. That's such a quality signing. Getting T.J. McConnell for $11.25 million a year, that's well done by the Pacers. Good for them.
He busts up the Kings every single time.
I feel like he busts up every team, dude.
Yeah, the whole time you're wondering why he doesn't play more. And then, like, that's that team, the way that they've built themselves, like, they get some gritty dudes.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those guys that just like really he brings it. But then they also have Nembhard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got like that's another guy that very similar, like just a tough guy to defend. And I'm intrigued to see how that team grows.
This is some good news for the Kings, and this ties into something I've thought about for a while. Because again, you have to remember my journey in Sacramento media. I started in August of 2011, I started interning at a sports talk radio station. And the conversation about the Kings was exactly the same that offseason as it was when I started doing a morning show out here in 2018. Like, it never changed. Save for the Here We Stay movement and all that. That was incredible. That's part of the reason I fell in love with the city. But outside of that, from the on-court basketball perspective, it was like every year was the same exact conversation. And every year it felt like a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been doing this show now for two NBA off-seasons? And it's just been normal.
No drama.
It's been super regular.
Mint.
It's not been, and don't get it twisted. It's not been perfect. There are things I think the Kings could have done differently last year and this year. But again, it's normal, like, gripes with team building. It's the same kind of gripes I have with the 49ers and their team building. Like, yeah, they did a lot. Are there things I would have done? Yeah, maybe. But overall, like, it's just normal.
Yeah.
It's so nice. It's been wonderful.
I agree. Like, my first year covering the team, we knew in the first, at the final preseason game, like, Gavin Malouf hung out in the media room watching the preseason, like, media in the press conference room, and he didn't get up and scurry out. And as soon as we got up, we started asking him, because there was, I think it was, a convergence plan was failing right then. We knew, like, that day, the day before, it was failing. And so we started asking him, and right away he let it slip that they would consider all options. And it was like, oh, this thing is on. My first preseason, I didn't even know if I was going to be allowed in the game, into a game with a media credential. And that was one of my first acts as a reporter. And the next thing you know, I'm in full-blown relocation mode. Full-blown.
Welcome to the beat!
Relocation, where you're going to, Tuesday night, you got city council meeting. Wednesday night, you got a Kings game. Thursday night, you got another city council meeting. Friday, you got another Kings game. Like, every day. It was so wild. Insane. And outlandish. Then, you know, we get fast forward a couple of years and you got a full relocation attempt again. You had the stupid one in between where they tried to go to, like, Virginia Beach.
Yeah.
So they tried to do that, and it was like, what is happening? And then, like, on top of that, the Cousins situation and constant coaching firings, and, like, it was so wild and chaotic. Mm-hmm. So you're right. It is kind of, this is the first time I've taken, like, a mental break where I don't feel forced to write every single day, and I don't feel forced to write, like, you know, seven things a month during the off season. It feels calm. And yeah. I think that's something, like, hat tip to Monty McNair, because this era of Kings basketball, it does feel different.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it's not chaos. It's not, like, do they get things done? Are they mentioned in way too many trades? Yeah.
Sure.
And do you have your big man at his camp say, yeah, things kept falling through. Mm-hmm. Just really excited to get to Marta Rosen because, you know, things kept falling through.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, I wonder what those things were. We know part of what they were. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that's refreshing as opposed to just flat out chaos.
It's refreshing as opposed to Sabonis doesn't have a new contract and now he's asking out and this draft pick is terrible. And this free agent is already doesn't want to be here and is looking for a way. Like, it's just, it has been so, so great to just be able to have a normal couple off seasons where the conversation's different. And it's about, hey, you know what? Hey, they look like, man, this is a playoff team. 50, 55 games. Things kind of go right. Like, this is exciting. And part of it is ESPN did their continuity rankings. And they did this based on the percentage of minutes you have returning and percentage of wins above replacement that you have returning.
Yeah.
The Houston Rockets are number one. They're returning 75.7% of their minutes and 94.4% of their wins above replacement. The Kings, seventh, returning 65% of their minutes and 90.5% of their wins above replacement. And I think that speaks to, and is part of the reason that, yeah, hey, it's just kind of been normal. That's what a team that is building and moving the right direction does. You're returning most of your minutes, you're returning all of your best players, and everything's kind of moving the right way.
Well, that, and you're returning your coach. Like, again, I've said this before, but
Damian Barling here for the handoff, everybody.
Hello, Dame.
That is me.
We're talking about how normal the Kings are now. Go on, James.
So, like, Mike Brown is the ninth head coach I've covered going into my 15th season. He is the first head coach to get a second contract.
Crazy.
I mean, that's the continuity thing. It matters. And this is the first time they've embraced that idea, continuity.
Yep. The Kings ranked seventh in ESPN's continuity rankings, where they took a percentage of your returning minutes and a percentage of your returning wins above replacement.
Okay. I've never heard of continuity rankings.
Yeah,
before. I guess that's fun. Who's
they're just
first?
Making things up.
Houston is first.
Okay.
75.7% of their minutes and 94.4% of their wins above replacement.
Interesting.
Second
okay.
is the Magic.
Okay.
Boston number three.
I get it. Yeah. Okay.
The Lakers number five, tied with the Cavs. And this is where that's not always a good thing. Because we're talking about the Kings being like, because when I started in Sacramento, it was August of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So summer of 2011. And then when I started doing a morning show in 2018, the conversation was just the same. It was the same Kings every year.
Mm-hmm.
It was always kind of a mess.
Yeah.
And now we were just talking and like, man, this is great that they're just kind of a normal team now.
Yeah.
And I think
it's awesome.
Yeah, it's so nice.
Yeah. No, not being a disaster is terrific.
But I think part of it is because of this and what James just said, they bought into this idea of continuity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not always a good thing because the Lakers are fifth. They're returning 94.8% of their wins above replacement, but that's not necessarily great when most of your wins above replacement are two guys and you were the 8 seed last year.
There's probably continuity by choice.
Yeah.
And continuity by no other choice. Like,
that's exactly probably, it.
It kind of feels exactly like the Kings were, they, you know, they wanted DeMar. Maybe they were going to take a bigger mm-hmm. swing at Lauri Markkanen or whatever, but mm-hmm. like they were kind of bought in on the group that they had. The Lakers, on the other hand, probably didn't really have a choice.
Yeah.
I'm sure Houston is in on their group.
Mm-hmm.
Orlando's definitely in on their group. Obviously, Boston.
Yeah, I think they feel good about where they're
at. We're only missing one. Who's four?
Oklahoma City.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, so the Lakers are the outlier in that group.
Yeah, because
Lakers are the
Cleveland's
complete
next.
Outlier. And some people like Cleveland more than others. Jesse hates Cleveland, but...
That tracks.
I'm in on the Cavs again. I could see them.
I think they're all right.
You know, fighting with the Knicks and that group up there for not for Boston, not for one, but for 2, 3, 4, something like that.
Yeah, they're fun. I even if they were to take a bigger jump and you saw someone else take like a step back just because they're not worried about the regular season, I could see them finishing number two. But I would think it would be one of those number twos. It's not going to go mm-hmm. like you're not going to get bounced in the first round, but you might get bounced in the second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we'll see. Cleveland's got a lot of work to do. That's
yeah,
for
they
sure.
do. Yeah,
that's
they got to figure sure. out. They've like committed to a path, and now they got to figure out how to make that work.
Well, they did make a switch. Like they changed head coaches.
They
so
did.
That's
yeah,
a,
yeah.
That's
but with
a,
their but with their roster,
deal.
They didn't
yeah.
trade anybody.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
I think it's interesting to look at continuity that way, like the way that they're looking at this and breaking it down with mm-hmm. like win shares, and minutes played and all that stuff.
It's
and,
an interesting well, conversation.
To,
for
yeah,
sure.
I was trying to. I thought when I first opened this, I was like, man, the Kings are bringing back like almost everybody. They added DeMar, but I forgot that Harrison Barnes played significant minutes last year.
So did Davion.
Yeah.
Davion
yeah.
played, I mean, if you're looking mm-hmm. at like percentage of minutes played and stuff,
yeah,
like win shares, though, I don't think either one of them were big on win shares. So I think they actually like mm-hmm. probably helps the team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think
wins
so.
Above replacement, whatever.
Yeah. Niners had a bunch of stuff go right over the last few days.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, while it's undoubtedly...
Well, one better, glaring thing went wrong over the weekend.
Yeah, well, yeah right, yeah. yeah.
But went right after that, so shout out Ricky.
I can't believe how many people are trying to spin that as like a... Did you see what the Niners broadcaster
yeah,
said on...
I know he was trying to be charming. That's not charming.
Not at all.
This is...
No.
Like, I get, like, he probably thought it was cute. It's not.
No,
and if the guys are talking like that in the locker room, that's fine. Let that stay in the locker room.
100%.
Don't bring that out to the public. There is nothing like you're glamorizing getting shot. Like, don't come on, bro. Don't do that.
No,
don't do
no.
that. Like
not
this could have been
for a rookie would have been to go. There you go.
This could have been terribly, terribly tragic.
Yes,
and
yes.
to pass it off like, oh, he's really gaining some street cred out here. Like, come on,
no.
Tim. Don't do that,
dude. He got
that's
he
gross.
He got shot with a gun.
Yeah.
He did not get in a minor scuffle.
Yeah.
No.
Again, if that's happening in the locker room, let it happen in the
sure.
locker room. Don't take it to the radio stations.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't need to make this
it's no. whack. That's so whack.
It's totally
super
bizarre.
Trent Williams.
But yes, a lot of things.
Trent Williams back in the facility today, not practicing. My question is if this all happened in time for them to be effective in week one. I'm still deeply concerned about week one with Brandon Ayuk and Trent Williams getting 3 and 4 days of practice.
No, I completely understand. I am too, a little bit. Part of what alleviates that is I don't like the Jets. I don't buy it. I don't buy anything anyone says about them. I think they're grossly overrated and overhyped. I'm glad that they had a nice defense last year. That's mm-hmm. fine. Keep using that same excuse when I talk about the Jets. Just explain to me how Aaron Rodgers isn't going to get murdered for a second straight year. Did they fix that line? That's my mm-hmm. only question. Mm-hmm. Everybody keeps reciting this nonsense about the Jets defense, and it's not nonsense. They were good. Mm-hmm. The Jets defense, that's fine. Who's protecting your 40-something-year-old quarterback?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can't answer that for me, I can't help you.
Yep.
He played, what, 3 plays last year. He nearly got murdered on 2 of them, and he popped his ACL on the third one.
Achilles.
Or his Achilles, sorry. He popped his Achilles on the third one. Okay.
All right.
Then what happened? A variety of quarterbacks got murdered the next 17 games of the season. So yeah. I am absolutely concerned for the San Francisco 49ers, less so just because I'm not completely buying their week one opponent. My thing all along was I like Brandon Ayuk. He's a wide receiver one. I think he is a massive difference maker for this team. I am worried that he's going to start slow. I'm far less worried about Trent Williams mm-hmm. starting slow, but I do believe he is the most important player to that San Francisco 49ers offense. And just the fact that he's back and his agency is tweeting that we're getting ready to close the deal,
yep.
that's a big deal. This yep. isn't Schefter leaking it. This isn't Ian Rappaport it. This isn't sources. This is the agency that represents Trent Williams saying he's on his way back to San Francisco and we're closing out a deal with the San Francisco 49ers. That's a major deal.
No doubt. D'Lo and KC coming up next. What do you guys got?
This. A lot about Trent Williams, San Francisco 49ers, and probably just a lot in the NFL in general. Trista will be with us at 2, Jason Jones in the 3 o'clock hour, so good stuff ahead.
Can't wait. D'Lo and KC coming up next. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders. Back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Until then, drink water, be nice to people. Bye.